Voices of VR Podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR Podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series of looking at different announcements around Snap Spectacles and doing a deep dive into the ecosystem of Snap. So today's episode is with Max and Lisi. They're both developers who've had early access to the Snap Spectacles and developed a whole open source application called Polygon Studio, which is essentially like a low poly modeler where you can start to click individual vertex points. And so you can basically model with your hands and then export it. So it's basically like a 3D modeling program within the context of the spectacles. Max is also an ambassador for Snapchat AR and also has developed a number of other the launch titles where you can like shoot fly arrows out from your hands and it will detect the depth map, then the scene understanding, and start to attach the shooting of flowers onto things. So some other cool apps as well. So Max has also been involved with the Lin Studio since like the very beginning. And so he teaches lots of classes around it. And one thing that came up in previous interviews is that in order to get one of these immersive experiences onto the Snap Spectacles, that you pretty much have to use the Lin Studio. There's no announcements around OpenXR or WebXR, although there's some rumors that they might be working on something like that. But as of right now, basically the only way to get an experience onto the Spectacles is through the Lin Studio. So there were some previous questions of the last couple of interviews around it. Okay, is this a proper game engine? And obviously it's not as fully fledged as all these other engines out in the market, whether it's Unity, Unreal Engine, or Godot. But because it's vertically integrated software and hardware, they have to really be efficient with what is running on this platform. So they've developed their own pipeline. And actually, if you're designing lenses that are built for the spectacles, it can also essentially use all the same tools to be built for other platforms, including their mobile apps, but also potentially these web ecosystems as well. They're using JavaScript and TypeScript to pull all this stuff together. So I think there's going to be a number of different target outputs for a lot of these things from both the spectacles, the web, and iOS and Android apps. But they're essentially right now, everything for the spectacles is focused on Lin Studio and the pipeline for that. So anyway, get a lot more context as to both the Lin Studio, but also just the broader ecosystem. I guess just from a comment from my perspective is that in talking to lots of different AR developers, like Snap has managed to cultivate the most interesting, most creative, most artistic community of independent AR developers. And they have an actual like viable ecosystem. And Spark AR was basically shuttered by Meta. There's been nothing to replace it. So it's basically between like Snap and TikTok. And so most of the most advanced features and platform and some of the most interesting creative output is happening on the Snap platform. So I think from that perspective, it's very interesting to take this existing community that has been cultivated on the platform that is using AR for self-expression. And now you're taking some of those same tools and creators, and then instead of self-expression, I think most of what's going to be happening on the spectacles is actually going to be out in the world. So it's going to be more world-facing than kind of front-facing, as doing filters onto people's faces. So anyway, we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR Podcast. So this interview with Max and Lisi happened on Tuesday, September 17th, 2024. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I'm Max. I'm a lens creator, and I've been building with Snap AR since 2018, since Lens Studio came out. I have a background in visual effects for film, but I'm now fully working in augmented reality and building for spectacles, but also just for mobile app and, yeah, for branded content mostly, like marketing materials.
I'm Lisi. I'm a creative with AR, but also a bit of gaming, Roblox and such, building stuff for brands mostly. Also, yeah, some personal project, of course, next to that. I have background in motion design and 3D.
Great. Maybe you could each give a bit more context as to your background and all the disciplines you're pulling together, and then a little bit more about your journey into the space.
So, yeah, I used to be working as a compositor in visual effects. So that's very, it's in a way very similar to augmented reality, which I always really liked. That's kind of how I started doing augmented reality as a hobby, because I see it as the real-time version of visual effects. It was just very fascinating to me to watch my creations in real time on a mobile phone instead of being rendered on a computer first. And I really liked that step to going to real time. And so I started doing it as a hobby. And then this AR agency in Amsterdam, Go Spooky, they reached out. They saw my work online and they were like asking if I wanted to work there. So I started working there as an AR developer, and now I left Go Spooky a while ago, and I'm working for myself together with Lisi. We have like a small agency, and we're building AR for brands, and yeah, really starting to do it for ourselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, I started with motion design and 3D mostly, and I was also hired to Go Spooky as a motion designer first, and then we started to build a tech team just before Max actually like joined also. And then I was like creating assets. I kind of liked it a lot, you know, like how you can do like very different stuff like than I was used to doing with 3D overall. So I switched to AR team and I was there as a creative. And now, well, now it's called tech team, but doing that still. Yeah, I'm still like part-time there. And then like next to that, I'm working with Max with different kind of AR projects.
Okay, so you'll have a lot of insight into like the history and development of AR Studio since the very beginning, because as I've been talking to people here, just learning more about how, in order to put experiences onto the Snap Spectacles, you have to use the Lens Studio from Snapchat and their own kind of operating system. So maybe you could describe to me a little bit of like what it's been like to work with the Lens Studio and then how it's changed and evolved over the years.
Yeah, so I am also a Snap ambassador, and that's for good reason. I'm like super biased towards Snap AR. I really like Lens Studio. I really like their software, and the whole AR platform is, in my opinion, the best of the social AR platforms. It's the most advanced one, the most features. They have a lot of just out-of-the-box ML tools and scene understanding that just works. You can literally drag and drop stuff like 3D body tracking, 3D hand tracking. You know, you get a mesh of the face. You get all of that stuff is already in there for free. And so you can really start creating on top of that, and you can use the data that the tool gives you. I have a bit of a background with Unity. I used to build Unity for the HTC Vive, the VR glasses, and I really like how Lens Studio is kind of a, well, especially when it started, it was just like a very lightweight edition of Unity. It's got the same structures, the same, you know, you've got an inspector panel, you've got your scene hierarchy, everything is in the same layout. And now it's really becoming its own thing, and it's really growing into, I would say, like a game engine, but of course still very new and fresh and not at all bloated, which I really like. It's like a very small tool and very friendly to pick up. So Lens Studio is, in my eyes, like a very interesting candidate for a modern game engine in AR, because it's so small and new still. And yeah, they're just so packed with features. It's really cool.
Yeah, I feel also like next to that, like, that Snap is like they are nurturing really much like the community overall, like with the developers, and it feels like that is like important product for them, like Lens Studio and Lenses overall, which I feel like other platforms are kind of failing with, like building the community and listening, yeah, like what kind of features would they want to see, like who are actually like building the stuff for them. So I also like it, like for example now with the Lens Studio 5, like they made so many improvements and they listened, they like collected data from the developers like who are actually using the tools, and not just like, okay, we think this is the best way to go and let's just do it and see what is the reaction. But they are like, yeah, I also feel like it is way more simple to use, even though it's like packed with way more features than like the competitors.
So in terms of the economics of sustaining and building this ecosystem, it seems like when I've talked to previous creators of different lenses that there seem to be a lot of branded content of different agencies and stuff paying to develop those lenses. Is that the main monetization strategy, is have these companies buy these kind of branded campaigns, or is there other ways within the Snapchat platform that you're able to sustain yourself as a business, as an independent creator?
Yeah, I'm thinking for me, it is indeed very much focused on selling branded content, doing marketing projects. We also work internally with Snap on R&D stuff, but that's of course like a different type of thing. For now, I think for creators, it's creating a branded lens or creating a branded AR experience in some way is probably the most straightforward way of getting paid for your work. But there is also, with the Spotlight program or with in Snap in the app, you get like paid per view if you make good videos, or you get paid for the ads that are shown in between your videos. So I feel like the videos that come out of the AR are also a really big, really important thing to consider when you're working with AR. Because I also, with the work that I do, I always post videos of it on other apps, on Instagram. Not really on TikTok, but more on like Twitter or these kind of places where they can go viral on their own. So on LinkedIn, sometimes you go viral with a video of an AR lens that you made. And that's always very interesting to see, because then people aren't even using the AR necessarily, but they see what's possible with it and they see the creative idea behind it. And that in turn gives you work again, and it gives you a new yeah, it's keeping my name out there and it's making sure that I keep getting work. I think that for me, the main source of income is definitely just selling branded lenses, selling like branded content, and that can be for advertising goals. So it can be just like a brand that wants their logo to be out there, but it can also be, I really like to work for musicians, or they're always way more free with their creative, and musicians are always very chill to work for. They always just like all the visuals and they want everything to be as pretty as it can be, and they give you a lot of freedom. But that's kind of the type of clients that you get. Yeah.
Just to clarify on one point that you made, which is that you said that Snap will pay creators for video views. Is that if you make a video of your own AR lens, or does that mean that if you have an AR lens that's used in another video that you get some sort of commission? Or maybe you just expand on what you meant by that.
That's a good point. It's not like when you have an AR lens and it gets used in the spotlight, then you get paid. That would actually be a very interesting thing to suggest. Thank you. But no, it's about the spotlight. When it goes viral, they just want to incentivize good content. So when something goes viral or it goes really far, then the poster of that video, they get paid for a certain amount of views. And so there's also a kind of, because lenses go viral a lot. That was clear to me in 2018 already, when I made like really dumb memes and they got millions of views immediately. And then you just know, like, okay, there's really an audience for this. And that's also in spotlight kind of a big driver, I think. Like, people are looking for funny lenses, or they're looking for ways to make their content more appealing, or to make it spread faster.
Okay, so it sounds like you get a certain amount of views as part of the spotlight or creator program, then those views can earn income. And do you make your own videos that get those views and income, or not?
I'm personally not much of a Snapchat like influencer myself. I'm more there for the AR and for the... My account is not really... I only post lenses. I don't post content, so no.
Okay, well, I'd love to hear a little reflections on the different genres that you see emerging within this space, in terms of like facial filters or other type of things that people are asking for, or things that you're building.
Yeah, I think like now it's more and more trending to kind of give tools for people, like exactly like video creation, not per se even like a very like extreme lenses where you have like something layered on top, but just like to actually create like nice pieces of content with the tools. Well, then again, memes are always like, the fun stuff will always be probably like in the core of the lenses. It's just like very fun just to scroll the carousel and like show them around, especially for your parents or grandma, like they are going to always go crazy with that. But yeah, I think like a video creation, like very like high end content, even like how you can edit and like cut videos and like so on.
Yeah, when I look at what's happening here with Snap, with the Snap Spectacles, it's a little baffling in terms of like what the strategy is going to end up being. But I feel like at the same time, Snap has been taking like a completely different approach with how they're developing these technologies, in a way that they're not always following the same rules that I would expect to see what other folks are doing. So it's hard for me to know like how it's going to continue to develop out, because it feels like they've very much been investing in a lot of developers and creators, and they have a lot of stuff that's launching, and then it's basically a new platform with not really much a market, and it's going to be a developer kit that folks are going to have to pay $99 a month in order to even get access to. But it seems like, on the other hand, that they've been actually really investing in cultivating a community and working with independent creators and developers to either fund them or find projects or find a way that they bring them into the fold to actually co-develop some of these different projects that they're launching. So I'd love to hear some of your own experiences of that type of collaboration and the ways that you see that Snapchat has been helping to cultivate a developer ecosystem.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's Snapchat is for me the most approachable community that I've ever worked with, because they're so easy for support, or for when I have technical questions, I'm immediately, you know, just directly talking with somebody who works on Lens Studio, who's like one of the developers there, and they're just like checking if it's a bug in Lens Studio and then they're fixing it, or they're just checking if there's like a feature that I would like to see added, and they actually listen to that. They will add that feature if it's a good idea. So in terms of technical support, they're the best. Like, it's super easy to work with them. And then there's, of course, these events like LensFest and SPS. And we have these calls. Right now it's once every quarter, I think, the video calls with just all the SLN members. The SnapLens Network, that's the network where you can just apply to be like an official developer in the Snap AR community. And then you are part of these calls and you get these emails with updates. And sometimes they send you beta versions for their software so you can test new features before they're publicly released. And it's really fun to work like that. It's a very, it feels like they're taking you very seriously in your work.
Yeah, I also think like they are again, like nurturing the community, like also like they are available to any idea. Basically, you can just email them, and usually like they are very, very quick to respond, and like, or then like direct you to the right person like to talk to and stuff. So I do think like the community that they have built, also with now probably like more and more with the spectacle, like that is very interesting, because then you can also connect with the other creators, and not only with Snap that is like a back and forth with the company, but it's actually like creating like bigger pool of people who might be able to help you with something, or then just team up and like come up with new ideas.
And I'm wondering if you could elaborate on when you said we have these goals, because I was wondering, okay, we is like, you're not a part of Snap as a company, but yet you're an ambassador, but you're also part of these different affiliate networks. And so maybe you could elaborate on like these collective goals and those boundaries between, when you say we, it's almost like, it sounds like you're speaking on behalf of the company, but of course you're not. So I'm just curious if you could elaborate on that.
I think, I'm indeed not employed by Snap in any way. I'm just like, I'm an ambassador for the AR platform, meaning that they give me opportunities to do, you know, I'm speaking at conferences sometimes, or I'm doing like workshops or those kind of things. But in general, it's, yeah, I'm just like an individual creating, using their platform. They are not really in between me and my clients, for example. Like, they have nothing to do with that. I'm not paying them, or they're not paying me when we're doing work, but they do give out work to creators. So they're like, okay, this one artist just came up to Snap and they wanted the Snap lens, and then they just send it out to a creator. They're like, okay, that person would be perfect for it, and they step out of it and they just give the contact directly to that creator. So that's kind of why it feels very close. It feels very personal when you're working with them. In terms of like shared goals, indeed, it's not like, you know, we don't share goals with Snap in that sense. We're just like creating our own stuff, and those goals might change, but we're just very happy that they're always like listening to what we need and adapting to that.
Yeah, just really fascinating to learn more about it. It's distinctly different than what's happening in other aspects of the XR industry. So I just want to, thanks for elaborating a little bit more on that. So let's get to the spectacles, because you've been involved very closely with working with Snap for a number of years now. They've had a number of different iterations. And so I'd love to hear like when the spectacles first came onto your radar, and why is it an interesting platform for you to consider to start to build for?
Well, I think that is like the future of AR, like honestly, like it just feels like it makes more sense somehow, that like also having your both hands free when you're using the tools, you don't have to have any more, like it's not tied into the platform that much. So that also is going to make it easier for anyone to just try out and like see. Next to that, I think like it's going to bring also like a lot of like better use cases, like utility, like lenses with, for example, people with disabilities and such, like because you have like then, well, microphone, for example, and then speaker. It knows like the world data. So I think like there is a lot like where it can go. Of course, like it is about the developer, like how much we're gonna be able to make and like in which time it's gonna be. But I do see like that the future is going more and more to that.
Yeah, that last point definitely is also like super interesting. Like right now, I feel like the ball is in the court of the developers, and we need content now. Like, people need to start creating, and we now have a good base in AR to see what glasses can do, and we can see the tech, because we've been using them for a while and they're really good. Like, it's just really fun to work for them, but we do need content now to make them interesting to the general public, and to make them really, you know, like a product that we can really show, okay, this is like worth it, this has value, this is getting out there. And right now there is already content for it. There's already like a bunch of lenses that Snap made and a bunch of lenses that other agencies made. But I'm super excited to see what developers are now going to be creating with these glasses now that they're available to everyone. Yeah.
And were you involved with any of the previous generations of spectacles? Because this is the fifth generation that was just announced today. So I'm curious what version or what generation number did you get involved with, and how you've seen it as a platform continue to develop?
In terms of AR, it starts counting at the fourth generation. The generation before those were the glasses that could only record. So that was just for making POV videos. And the fourth generation in 2021 was a very nice demo of where they were going. And it was like a sort of prototype, like, okay, we can do this in theory. And it looked fun on your face and you could try something for a couple minutes, but then the battery ran out or it overheated. It was like very clearly a demo, just for demo purposes. They didn't sell them also. It was only by request. If you were a developer, you could request one and then you could create for it. And these new glasses are, of course, they fixed those issues and you can now actually use them. And the quality is much better. The FOV is bigger. So you're actually having true AR on your face, not like a pass-through glass, but like, yeah, actual overlaid AR. And then in combination with Lens Studio, I think that's a very fun, lightweight way of developing stuff where you can push something very quickly from your computer to your glasses while you're wearing them and going back and forth. So that's what I've been really enjoying with the spectacles. But yeah, it's only basically the only two generations that matter in terms of AR are the fourth and the fifth generation. But yeah.
Yeah, I remember trying it on at Augmented World Expo 2022. In November, and someone had a pair, a developer, and I think it was like a 20-minute battery life or something like that. Now it's like 45 minutes, so it's like double the capacity, but still doesn't seem like it's like terribly long. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the battery life and how that's going to perhaps constrain or drive specific context-specific use cases.
Yeah, I think like what Snap also wants is, of course, like that you can take it anywhere and like use it outside and such. And I feel like, yeah, 45 minutes, of course, like it could be longer, but then again, how many times you are gonna maybe go outside, like in the end you can put the cable on and then use it inside like as long as you want. So that's a good side of it. And I think like, yeah, probably in the future the battery life is hopefully gonna be like, of course, longer. But I think like 45 minutes is already like good start, like because engaging with the lens, for example, 45 minutes is already like a long time in that sense. But yeah, curious to see like, yeah, also if there is gonna be like a new version, such like a how long it could be even like in such a small device, yeah, with the tech that we have now.
Yeah, I feel like the spectacles are also kind of built as a, you know, there's a very easy sort of sleep button on the top right. It's maybe also not the kind of device that you would have turned on the whole day. It's kind of something that you turn on when you need it. You know, it wakes up from sleep mode very quickly, so it's like you just switch between on and off, I guess. I'm just trying, because yeah, we were not allowed to take them outside or anything, so we haven't been able to test it in everyday life in that sense, just for NDA purposes. But then I guess that would be how I would wear them. I would just, you know, they're normal, regular glasses in that sense, or sunglasses if you put the tint mode on, and then you turn them on when you would need them, I think.
Great. So I got connected to you through the public relations liaison at Snap because you are involved in experimenting and exploring different potential applications. So what is it that you're building or making or experimenting with the Snap spectacles?
Yeah. So we are building a 3D modeling tool, which it's called Polygon Studio, and it's like for low poly 3D modeling. We thought it would be really funny to have a where you can grab individual vertices with your fingers. So you can just just pinch your finger and your thumb together, and then you can grab a vertex and drag it around and create more triangles, give them colors and all that stuff. And then you can actually export it as a 3D model. So it's like a low-poly 3D modeling tool. And we already made this for the original spectacles in the fourth generation in 2021, but that was more of a prototype, and it wasn't actually usable. It was more to demonstrate what it could be. And then for this one, we were asked to rebuild it just completely from scratch and then make it multiplayer also. So you can, with your friends, you can like build a 3D model together and export that and use it in other creations. So it's really a creation tool. Yeah, we were looking for something that had a sort of utility in it, something that could be like a useful app.
So it sounds like, kind of reminds me of like pixel art, but now it's low poly art. Yeah. But then you've got things like Gravity Sketch, which is in VR to do like really sophisticated vertice manipulation to be able to create optimized low poly models. That seems to be like really robust and has controllers and everything. So I imagine that's a little bit more limited with just using your hands. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear what you expect people to create this kind of like retro low poly pixel art, you know, aesthetic. If you feel like that's going to be something that's going to drive people to kind of have a low barrier to be able to create art that reminds me of a lot of like retro pixel art.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. It sometimes gets compared with stuff like Tilt Brush or, you know, like the drawing in VR apps. But this is really, it's much more lightweight. It's much more just a smaller project. It's just for like a low poly creation tool that we thought it would be fun to see what people are going to do with it. And it also, another big part of this project is that we wanted to make this fully open source and just share all the project files so that it could also serve as a learning resource for people who want to get started with the spectacles. So it shows you how to do hand interactions, it shows you how to do multiplayer, and you know, you've got all the basics of functioning spectacles lens, and then we are just sharing those Lens Studio 5 project files fully. And that was also like a big purpose of this project, to kind of serve as documentation almost, that people can look into and they can read the code and see how it was set up.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the project.
Yeah, indeed, like it is a light version one. Then again, also it was like already now a long time ago when we started to think about it. One thing like was interesting, like that Max, like I built a system where you can actually export the model with QR codes basically, which was insane, like especially back at that time I was like, you did what? And like, yeah, it was like, let me just show you. So it was a bit of a experiment also, like just to see also like how far you can maybe go with that. And I think like now with the new one also, like for it being open source, I think like it is indeed kind of showing like, okay, there's like so many possibilities what you can do probably more in the future. So yeah,
we hope that people open up this project and that they start adding their own features to it, and like that they're gonna maybe create their own tools out of this, because the whole mesh editing is now set up, all of the base for a 3D modeler is there. So it would be fun if this would become like a sort of boilerplate project for a 3D modeling tool or in some way.
And is this all ready to be launched for the launch of the Snap Spectacles?
Yes, this week it's going out. So it should come preloaded on any new devices that are shipped.
Okay, and people can get the open source code to hack it and modify it for whatever they want to do with it. And
absolutely, yeah. It's all, you can just use any of this code from there, or yeah, it's all out there.
Nice. And so there's a couple things that come to mind. One is that when Google was getting into creating the different software, they created Google Blocks, which was very similar to like a low poly editing. But then they also had Google Poly, where you could upload your different objects to then have these repositories of different low poly objects to then bring into different experiences. For like the Wave XR had a lot of tight integrations with Google Poly. So when you talk about exporting, is it, do you have like a shared resources and repository of different 3D objects that you're also in the process of building out?
That's not in there right now. That would be really fun to do, but no, that's not something that's on the roadmap right now. But it sounds like those kind of things are really cool. And Snap is actually building a lot of tools right now for server-sided. For example, today they also released in Lens Studio the leaderboard function, where you can, in normal Snap lenses, you can now create easy leaderboards, which was actually really hard or almost impossible to do before they released this, because these kind of server-sided storage and sharing data between AR experiences, it always comes with a lot of legalities and other things that they are working through. But right now it feels like they're more and more focusing on external APIs and talking with web servers from within the lens and all those kind of things. So I think that these kind of features, it would still take a little while, but it's definitely gonna be possible soon to make a sort of gallery of what everyone has created and watching that. But right now that would be still a bit complex, I think.
Yeah, as I've talked to a number of different creators that are working with early access to the Snap Spectacles and a number of game developers, and so it's been very interesting to hear around how they've been using the Lens Studio to push at the edges for that type of interactivity, where it obviously didn't start as a game engine, but it feels like with more and more of these game-like components like leaderboards, that there seems to be more and more of a gamification, or at least turning the Lens Studio more and more into a proper, fully spatial game engine. So since you work so closely with it, I'd love to hear some of your thoughts and reflections of this evolution of like becoming more and more game engine-like as time goes on.
Yeah, I think it is true. Of course, like it is going to be still like lighter than like a proper game engine in that sense, but it was already, was it 21 when we did the hunt, treasure hunt?
Yeah.
It was like right after when LiDAR was announced, like that it works like also with Lens Studio. Then we did like this real life scavenger hunt, basically, where you had to like find tools and like then collect stuff, which was like very interesting. Like it was like a side project in that sense. So it also took like a long while, and we were like adding and like taking out stuff. But it was like very interesting to kind of think like how you can expand games to augmented reality, which is like something that we already saw, of course, like with Pokemon Go, but in the end, like how many people actually use the AR? Usually people just turn it off, like, yeah, they don't need to see it, like it's gonna kill your battery and such. Yeah. But I do think like that was like very amazing for people to see, like, oh my god, like there's actually a Pokemon in my surrounding. So I think like it can like open, or it has opened like new thinking and like how we can, I don't know, experience games and such. Of course, yeah, you have to keep it like as simple in that sense, but that's also interesting, you know, like that you have to solve this puzzle like in a way that it actually works and runs like in these lower end devices also, but then you have like such a big power with actual environment.
Yeah, in terms of the coding and programming of LinStudio, I know like with Unreal Engine, they have blueprints and node-based processes. Unity has like C#, where you have a little more explicit coding. So is there a programming language for LinStudio, or what is it that they use in order to actually build out these experiences?
Yeah, so LinStudio uses JavaScript and TypeScript, so you can just combine those two for interactions. And then there's also a visual programming, like a node editor, which is basically just a JavaScript UI. You can just place nodes and it will compile it to JavaScript for you. And then for shaders, there's a node editor. Yeah, that's basically GeoSL. You can also write raw GeoSL, just like the code from, for example, from a shader toy. You can just copy and paste it into a little web tool that a lens creator actually made. It's like a web tool that converts shader toy code into LensStudio GeoSL code. But that's just because it's very similar. The GeoSL in LensStudio is almost the same as real GeoSL. And then there's also VFX Particles, which is their whole visual effects system. That's a node-based visual effects setup that just spawns loads of particles, and you can also give them interactions, and you can give them like colors, and they also have like a shader component to it. So there's a lot of different ways to build. You can use node editors or code or, yeah.
Okay, I guess I didn't realize it was using JavaScript and more of an open web technologies. Is it using WebXR at all on the back end, you know, like for their operating system? Or is it more of their own custom proprietary thing?
I think it's all proprietary. As far as I know, I don't know of any WebXR stuff, but I do know that all the scene understanding, also the rendering that's happening, I know that that's all like stuff that they are building internally and that they've just been working on that for years already. So I would be surprised if it's using WebXR. I don't think it is.
Okay. Well, one other technical aspect I want to dive in before we start to wrap up. The multiplayer things also seems quite interesting in terms of having group dynamics of people going out and being outside and doing things together. And so you have an ability to do multiplayer editing with these different experiences. And so I'm wondering what type of specific considerations need to be taken into account in order to do that type of social networking, network code between, if it's taken care of by different libraries that Snap has developed, or what type of specific considerations do you have to take into account when you're doing a multiplayer experience on these lenses and also with the spectacles?
Yeah, the multiplayer stuff, they have what is called Sync Framework. That is their own library of tools for multiplayer. So this makes it way easier to do multiplayer stuff, because you just get a bunch of events, you get a bunch of functions that you can assign stuff to, and everything is already set up. So it's, in a way, it was very easy for me to make it multiplayer, the lens, which was surprising. I was expecting it would take much longer. And they have their own mapping flow, which is very interesting, which is at the start of a lens, it just asks you to like do 5 steps in some direction, and then it uses depth and it uses the color of your surroundings to create a sort of virtual map. And then anyone else who joins, it will automatically scan for that same data and it will align your world space together. So that's all kind of taken care of already when you create a lens. You can build all of that from scratch, but they have tools for it that you can just import, and then you can use that. So it was, for me, it was actually very doable. You still have to, of course, always go through, but that's always with multiplayer developing, you have to go through the classic issues of, you know, who has control over which object, or who is like the owner of an object. But yeah, those are just things that are just intrinsic to multiplayer development. Yeah.
Have you been able to user test some of the different multiplayer features to see what kind of emergent social dynamics, or what kind of things you've noticed when you have multiplayer co-creation of low poly content?
Yeah, we haven't had like too many tries with the multiplayer one. We did do some tests with the function when it was like with mobile also, which wasn't working that well back in the day when they introduced it, of course. But I do think now trying with the new spectacles, I do think it is quite simple one that it kind of like knows when there is another person close by, and indeed like you only have to do the tracking ones, and then it is going to combine it. I think they are working on actually having both of the people doing the tracking, so it would be also more accurate in that sense. But yeah, I do feel when we were testing it that it was rather simple, and it was interesting then to see the other person actually there but not really there. And yeah, it will probably bring like also like new aspects for the stuff. But I haven't had like too many tries with like proper multiplayer, like how to actually, how the interactions are gonna go and like how is it socially, like how does it feel and like what does it bring?
I think one thing that excites me about the multiplayer is when you're not in the same room, there's that demo of people playing chess, but of course you can go way further with that. You can do like a whole thing where you see the body of a friend of yours who's in another country maybe, but then you're playing a game together in the same living room and you just see their ghost kind of standing there. And yeah, the multiplayer doesn't have to be in the same aligned space. You can also do that, you know, in different places and make a game around that.
Yeah, the experience that's showing here in the Dome by S. Devlin called Council, I don't know if you had a chance to try it, but has a lot of like community ritual aspects. So you have like a group of people sitting in a circle and using the augmented reality to facilitate this community attention setting ritual for meditating on the future of humanity and the world. And so, yeah, just kind of a really beautiful example for how you can start to use that. But yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what each of you think is the ultimate potential for all these spatial computing technologies and what they might be able to enable.
Oh, that's a good question. Ultimate potential as in like, I think that there's a lot of utility in AR that we're not thinking about right now. A lot of stuff, that's why we came up with Polygon Studio, but also in general with these kind of ideas like creation in 3D always feels a bit strange to do on a flat screen, for example. So it makes for me the most sense to just look at what are we doing in 3D right now on a computer, and then can we bring that to AR? That's kind of a good first step to make something that's useful. But I think that there is so much more that could be beyond entertainment, that could actually be creation tools or education or helping people with stuff. It feels like AR has a lot of potential there that is untapped because the hardware isn't in the general public yet. So this release of these glasses are kind of the moment where we can look at developers to see what they're going to do with it instead of looking at the companies to see what they're building. It feels like a sort of a next step in AR to have these released and to see what people are going to build.
Yeah, also for me, it just feels like more natural experience in that sense, like with AR, when you actually have just layered everything there and you don't have to look at the screen of your phone and like there is the frame and like it doesn't feel that you are really in that space that is on the screen. But I think like indeed like curious to see what the developers are gonna build for it, and I hope that it's gonna be like more utility so it is also easier to sell like for general public eventually. But I do think like once it is like released, then we're gonna also find out like so many new things that people actually are missing, and they're like, hey, why are you not doing this and why are you not doing that? So I think like there is probably ask, but no one knows yet what to ask, so then you kind of have to start with the like just building and seeing like what kind of ideas like it also brings like from that. And now the tech is there, like I think that's been like very much with utility lenses, like the problem that like the tech is not there, or then like the users are not really like it doesn't just feel like a normal way of working that you would take Snapchat out and then like start using AR to, I don't know, learn something or such. But I think like with the spectacles it might change quite a lot.
Great. So any other final thoughts or anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to share with the broader immersive community?
Go try out Lens Studio. I'm always when I'm talking in front of audiences who work with XR or who are like digital creators in some way, I'm always the first person to tell them that Lens Studio exists. And then I show them my work and what you can do with it, and also just visual fidelity things, like how many particles you can have on your phone in real time. People are always surprised. They're always like, oh, I didn't know that that was possible and free and easy to use. Like, I'm always a bit surprised that people have never heard of it before. So I hope that an event like this today is making the community grow a little bit.
Yeah, same.
Awesome. Well, it's great to get a little bit more of a historical context and evolution for Lens Studio and to hear a little bit more about the ecosystem and your own experiences. And yeah, I mean, I think it still feels like I don't know exactly how this is going to continue to develop and whether or not it's going to have the flywheel of innovation that requires both the hardware innovation and the market and the community. And so I can definitely say that there's a lot of excitement by developers, and the fact that I've heard from a lot of developers here that are going to go to the Lens Fest, that a lot of them are going to be getting for free the hardware that's out there. So it feels like it's a real investment in seeding the development community to actually get this technology in the hands of people that are going to actually make something interesting with it. And then from there, then we'll see after the next iterations where it goes from there. But it feels like the early days when I was at ARVR Vision Summit, and then Valve came in and gave free HTC Vives to everybody that was in the audience. And then it kickstarted the VR development community. And it feels like a similar kind of moment where a developer kit that's trying to seed new markets that are out there that don't quite exist yet, but at least Snapchat has a history of trying to work closely with the developers and listen to them. So for that, I give them a lot of leeway for not fully understanding this kind of like tax-free kind of universal basic income type of approach to how they're developing it. But I feel like, you know, there might be something there that we can learn from. So yeah, it'll be exciting to see how it continues to develop. But very much appreciated hearing a lot more context of that story from each of you today. So thank you for joining me to help break it all down. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast. That's a part of my larger series of doing a deep dive into both the announcements around Snap Spectacles as well as the AR ecosystem at Snap. What I do here at the Voices of VR podcast is fairly unique. I really like to lean into oral history, so to capture the stories of people who are on the front lines, but also to have my own experiences and to try to give a holistic picture of what's happening, not only with the company, but also the ecosystem of developers that they've been able to cultivate. And so for me, I find the most valuable information that comes from the independent artists and creators and developers who are at the front lines of pushing the edges of what this technology can do and listening to what their dreams and aspirations are for where this technology is going to go in the future. So I feel like that's a little bit different approach than what anybody else is doing, but it also takes a lot of time and energy to go to these places and to do these interviews and put it together in this type of production. So if you find value in that, then please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon. Just $5 a month will go a long way of helping me to sustain this type of coverage. And if you could give more, $10 or $20 or $50 a month, that has also been a huge help for allowing me to continue to bring this coverage. So you can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.